Welcome to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? You could text in 650-650, the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at DunbarLumber.com. At Canucks Talk is brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. It's a great day for hockey. We got Lena and Arash producing the show. I'm Josh Elliott Wolf, filling in for Jamie Dodd, and he is Thomas Drantz. How are you, Thomas?
Doing well. Fun game last night. I mean, it wasn't for most of it, but the last 10 minutes were scintillating.
Yes, they were. Back and forth.
Lots of talking points. Lots of grist for the old mill. Should we get to it?
Grist for the old mill. Let's get to the headlines. Or the whiteboard.
The whiteboard.
Wow.
Headlines are in the whiteboard.
Yeah.
So you're fine.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
Now the headlines, part of the whiteboard on Canucks Talk. Canucks lose to the Utah Hockey Clubbers, 3-2 in overtime.
The Hockey Clubbers?
Yeah, I've been rolling with that. I kind of like it. I don't know if I'm going to stick with it.
In the club, we're all fam.
We're all fam.
The Utah Hockey Club, have you considered that?
No.
Have you considered adding an ER there?
We'll throw that on the board, too.
You could add it. You could add Utah Hockey Club.
We're going too far now.
I don't know. I think that's what I'm calling them for the rest
yeah,
of time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let's be real, though. Generic sports names are the coolest. Washington football team, the coolest team.
I was fully on board with Washington football team. Utah Hockey Club isn't doing it for me.
Oh, I disagree. Utah Hockey Club is as cool as it gets. Every hockey team should do this, and then we can still call them by their nickname. Just like the Manchester United's the Red Devils and on, right? Like,
so you want the Canucks to be like Vancouver FC, but we still refer
Vancouver,
HC, sorry.
Vancouver HC, yeah. I definitely don't want them to be Vancouver Football Club. Yeah, no, the Vancouver Hockey Club, and then we still call them the Canucks?
That'd
be awesome.
That's crazy.
No, it's way better. Like,
you're a dreamer, man.
Oh, I know. Some will say. But despite my, you know, my passionate defense of Gal Gadot, I do want to say that, you know, I think generic sports names are the coolest in North American pro sports. Every time we get one, it's the coolest thing ever. Utah Hockey Club should never take a name.
All right. I you know what?
It's my two cents.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, the Canucks lose to the Utah Hockey Club 3-2 in overtime. Blow a 2-0 lead in the final 11 minutes. It was an exciting final 11 minutes, but they do lose in overtime. Utah kind of sneaking their way up the standings a little bit. They're pesky. They are a pesky team, but the Canucks come away with 1 point. But the bigger headline that has been dominating the news cycle in the last, well, more than 12 hours, but the last little bit is the JT Miller, Elias Pettersson conversation. And part of that last 10 minutes yesterday of the third period, the Canucks had a power play, and JT Miller and Elias Pettersson remained on different units on the power play. And so we had seen in Vancouver for the Canucks against the Avalanche, Elias Pettersson was playing on power play one. JT Miller was not. That was flipped yesterday. JT Miller was on power play one. Elias Pettersson was not. He was on power play two. What can we read into this, Drantz?
Oh, man. Look, you don't need to be best friends to have success together on a team. Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah.
Okay. You can actively dislike your teammate and be a championship caliber team.
They were playing together, though. They were on the floor at the same time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this team won 100 plus points. They won the Pacific Division. They advanced to the second round of the playoffs. The core group's the same. You know, like, there's no reason for this. And the Pettersson on power play two thing is a little bit asinine. Let's be real. It's odd. I don't know why. Maybe people just hadn't clued in because there were busier hockey nights when we'd seen it previously. But, you know, I had a lot of questions coming into my phone anyway from around the league. I think people are beginning to look at that side-eyed. It's askew. Like, Pettersson caliber game breakers are not on second power play units anywhere else in the league.
Yeah. Especially when, like, Connor Garland is on power play one. And I like Connor Garland, but if your power play is struggling, like, why are your two best forwards not on the same power play together?
It's wild. At the very least, you know, power play two got a goal last night, so wasn't all bad.
Good for Danton Heinen.
It looked funky, but it worked. Great shot by Danton Heinen. Mm-hmm. It got an enormous amount of velocity and accuracy while torquing his body. So, yeah, no, I mean, look, I think there's substance here. I don't think this is one of those external imaginary things that, you know, us navel gazers in the media and those on social media are just fueling in the absence of anything else. But I also don't have more details than that. So, well, whatever it is, I'm sure everyone's working on trying to rectify and figure out how to make it workable. We saw what this team looked like without JT Miller over a 10-game stretch, like just over the last 3 weeks, and it wasn't good. This team's offensive abilities, their ability to generate, fell off the map. And I think it wouldn't be dissimilar if they lost Pettersson. I mean, he's their most important game breaker. Miller's their top forward. They need both these guys to win.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get better trading either. So you got to figure it out. Period. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't have details beyond just sort of believing that there's some substance here. We've seen a million examples of high quality working relationships being functional and even successful across professional sports with people who aren't necessarily besties. That's it. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. And we don't have to get into what's going on necessarily.
Yeah.
But what I will say is it's just a very, if you are a Canucks fan looking at this, it is a very frustrating situation because we've seen them work in the past. We've seen them work together in the past. And we all know, we can all look at this team and say, hey, if you're going to be a contender, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson need to be going at the same time. And again, like you said, you don't have to be friends, but it can't get to the point where, man, like you're playing on different power play units. Or maybe, yeah,
that is honestly, that one is wild. I do want to say, though, I saw a lot of criticism of JT Miller after the game for the 3-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't know if people really understand 3-on-3 and some of the incentives at play, but you're pretty late in the overtime period. And people are criticizing Vancouver's most prolific overtime scorer, not just from this core group, but like one of their most prolific overtime goal scorers ever. For not changing, even though he subsequently generated a scoring chance. Like, that chance doesn't happen if Miller changes. At some point, you've got to give your best players license to go out there and win the game, especially in 3-on-3 overtime. And that requires you taking some chances. Now, the shot gets missed, comes up the wall. Logan Cooley is the player who swipes it forward. Guess who also didn't change and remained on the ice to try and give their team a chance to win for such a long period of time that if play had gone the other way, he would have been absolutely dead in the water. Logan Cooley. Kirill Kaprizov scored an overtime winner against the Canucks 110 seconds into a 3-on-3 overtime shift. That's almost 2 minutes long. And then people are criticizing Miller for not skating on the back check. Here's the thing. You can't cost your team a point in that situation, right? Sergachev is going to get a shot off on your goaltender, okay? Your incentives, like, I actually don't love the way he played it. And it's not because he stopped skating. It's that he tried too hard to get back. By the time you have a 2-on-1 in 3-on-3 overtime, The way to add win probability, the expected points to your team, is actually to hang back so you make sure you have a step if the save is made and play goes the other way.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I do kind of...
That's how you win. Like, that's how you win 3-on-3 overtime, man.
But
people are way too conservative about this. It's 3-on-3 overtime, and people are like, he should change. Play defense. Possess the... You don't want JT Miller making a creative foray? And look, like, it's not like I'm the guy who's usually on a pedestal or a stool defending JT Miller to high heaven. But I thought that criticism was wildly off base and actually betrayed a lack of understanding of what 3-on-3 overtime actually looks like in the NHL. Star players skip changes to generate chances to win, because if those chances go in, the game is over and your team has secured 2 points. So many of JT Miller's like best overtime goals have a sequence or a decision just like that. It's just that those pucks found the back of the net and this one didn't, and Sergachev managed to score. Honestly, I don't see the argument for criticizing Miller on that.
The only thing I think it's just more of a, hey, if this is a one-off, if the JT Miller back-checking thing was like, hey, this is the only time it's happened, then I think people would have more of an allowance for, hey, they can like subscribe to the theory of like this was a long shift and it's hard to get back. Maybe even getting back, to your point, wasn't the best plan. But I just think when you've had the history that JT Miller has had, it kind of plays into it.
But that's not fair. Like 3-on-3 needs to be treated differently. It's a distinct game state. You know, if you're criticizing Miller's defensive gaps 5-on-5, that's a totally different conversation to me. You know, I didn't like his penalty killing sequence. If you go watch the Gunther goal, which was ultimately a fortunate bounce, Miller's stick is in a non-existent passing lane. Mm-hmm. Because he hadn't shoulder checked right as the pass gets made cross seam, which, you know, is why I think he's been playing fewer minutes shorthanded. Right? Like if you want to say, hey, that was a tough penalty killing sequence and it turned out to be costly when the puck deflected off Teddy Bluger's chest and ended up beating Thatcher Demko as a changeup. Lots of off speed Utah Hockey Club goals last night, by the way, because I think Sergachev's shot probably might not have gotten a speeding ticket in a school zone, right?
Yeah,
I mean, he just
great.
Didn't get torque on it. Yeah. I actually think it handcuffed Demko because the shot didn't have its normal velocity. Anyway, my point being, like, if you want to criticize that, fine. That's fair. That's certainly something that I'd imagine in a pre-scout or a power penalty kill meeting might even be highlighted, right? Like, the team's probably looking at that. Miller's probably looking at that on an iPad and going, ah!
Yeah.
But the back check? Come on, that is wild stuff. Wild stuff. Best players need license to go for it 3-on-3. You create scoring chances by taking risks in 3-on-3. You don't always have to change. Criticism of Miller betrays an overall desire to pile on this player, in my opinion, and or a complete misunderstanding of risk management in the overtime game state as it's currently played in the NHL.
So you did say, like, hey, you want your best players to create in overtime, and this isn't necessarily related to JT Miller, but I think a lot of people were like, hey, he should change to get Pettersson on the ice in that situation. And what we did see yesterday was,
we're talking on the power play?
In overtime. Well, and on the power play.
Well,
and
this is the problem with not having them on the same unit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's situations where you want JT Miller to have the license. Like, we can't, in this market, be praising this guy to high heaven on a regular basis for his, like, aggression and gumption and stones, the onions, you know? And then be like, well, he went for it too much there.
I do agree,
like,
on
it's the aggression and decisiveness that makes this guy JT Miller, and this team needs JT Miller to win.
And on the power play, he has consistently been a guy that's like almost out there for the full 2 minutes. My issue again comes back to, like, they just shouldn't.
That is you're right. No argument there. That is a preposterous lineup thing. Oh, sorry. We've got so much to get to. Let's go to the broadsheet because I've got some stuff.
Okay. So a few trades made around the league yesterday we can get into later, but roster freeze tonight at midnight.
11:59 p.m.
Josh. Sorry. That's on me. My bad. I'll take responsibility.
Errors and omissions. We'll submit them to Canberra. Yeah.
Do you think the Canucks make a move before 11:59 tonight?
Okay, so obviously this is a tricky moment. Anytime there's deadlines in hockey, you know, until the deadline is passed and you see me tweet the Canucks are done for the day, right? Sometimes I get it 10 minutes before, but usually around the moment the deadline passes, anything can change with one phone call. The Canucks are obviously open for business. This is an aggressive front office. This is a team that's been working the phones and trying to upgrade in a variety of areas, but specifically on defense. And my understanding as of, you know, late this morning, is that the club's not particularly close. Now, again, can change with one phone call. But I don't expect the club at this juncture, barring a significant afternoon change, something out of left field, I don't expect the Canucks to execute a trade prior to the roster freeze hitting in. Further, my understanding is that, you know, again, while the Canucks have been turning over every stone in the search for a defender, amidst a flurry, a Christmas flurry,
wow,
on the trade market, with Alexandre Carrier going to the Nashville, going from the Nashville Predators to the Montreal Canadiens for Justin Barron, a rare Kent Hughes trade I like. We'll get into this more in an open segment. Capo Kakko being exchanged for my guy Will Borgen.
Yeah, it was a couple picks. Noted Thomas Drantz guys. On
those
the
are
yesterday.
Those are big time Thomas Drantz guys, no question. My guys. And the other one was?
P.O. Joseph, traded back to Pittsburgh from St. Louis for future considerations.
And separated from his brother. They had a tearful. Did you see the post they threw on Instagram? It was like their last dinner together. Wow, the meal looked sensational.
Wow.
Some really good-looking sweet potato. My goodness. Anyway. So, you know, that sucks for the Joseph brothers around the holidays, by the way.
It's fine.
No, it's sad.
They'll get back together for the holidays. It's fine. They'll see each other in a week.
I know, but it's like on the other side, it's like, oh, it's a new year. New year, new me.
Yeah.
But right before the holidays.
I'm going back to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that sucks. I think that sucks. So anyway, does not sound like the Canucks were especially aggressive in pursuit of those three blue line options.
Would you have liked them to have been more aggressive? Like, based on the price paid for Carrier, or like Borgen's kind of unique? Because
they're
it's
all unique. They're all super expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a big Justin Barron guy. Just as a general rule, not my cup of tea as a young, you know, sort of fringy NHL defender. But 6'2", 200 pounds, right-handed. First overall pick in 2020. Okay, represented Canada at the World Juniors, has played 100 NHL games at this stage of his career, and he's still a very young man, 23 years old. Okay? I mean, I think the equivalent piece is probably something like Sawyer Mignot.
Mm-hmm.
So Sawyer Mignot for Alexandre Carrier, how would we be reacting on the radio today? Would you be saying that was a little bit of an overpay?
I mean, personally, I would kind of be on board.
Really?
Yeah. I like Carrier, though.
I do, too. But I think that's a huge price to pay for a player who we know, given the size profile and on,
mm-hmm.
is almost certainly not going to play ever with Quinn Hughes. So it's not like you're getting the sort of defender that's going to bump Philip Peronic onto the second pair.
Yeah.
Never going to play ahead of Tyler Myers.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trading Sawyer Mignot for a relatively pricey third pair option?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends on where you're at with Sawyer Mignot. Like, to me, like do you think he's a for sure, like, surefire NHLer?
No, I don't.
And that's why I'm just like, if this is a guy that improves on your third pair, then I get it's overpaid, but I would be
But
I
think he's 60 cents on the dollar that can get you to a dollar to maybe add the impact defender that I think this team needs.
That's
fair. Which for me, like, I'm a big Alexandre Carrier guy. I don't think this team would get the most out of Alexandre Carrier. So, I loved the trade for Montreal, really liked it, thought it was a sharp deal. I don't know that I would have liked it for Vancouver because I don't think this team's set up to get the most out of the player anyway. Will Borgen, to me, would be the better target, but then we're talking about an equivalent value package that's something like Nils Höglander, a second-round pick, and a fifth?
Yeah, that feels
If they'd made that trade, how would we be reacting today? I think we'd all be like, whoa, that's a lot of upside surrendered for Will Borgen, who, by the way, and I say this as a guy who is probably higher on Will Borgen than anyone who's not a blood relative, okay?
The Borgens.
Yeah. He also wouldn't play in front of Tyler Myers.
Is that...
I'm telling you, he does not pass. Like, you know the Mendoza line in baseball?
That's the Myers line.
The Myers line. Is this defender actually the sort of game-changing piece that the Canucks can acquire who will actually play ahead of Tyler Myers? And you know what? It's an inconveniently difficult bar to leap over. You have to be an absolute no doubt about it. Like, not just a second pair guy, but like a pretty good one.
Is that just because they have so much trust in Tyler Myers? He's inevitable.
He's one of those players that teams every offseason look at the whiteboard and say, we need to upgrade there, and then they bring in pieces to try and upgrade there, and then you get into the season, you're like, ah, you know what? This guy's pretty good. He scores some. He's skilled enough. He's big. He's physical.
Can make a good first pass.
Yeah, he does. Well, and he's, you know, elite surfing the blue line and getting play going the other way. Like, he's legitimately elite in that one area. And it's an important area because that's, you know, neutral zone defending. And, you know, you have to be really good. You have to be really good to actually play more minutes than Tyler Myers. So, you know, Borgen, for me, is a coin flip to leap over the Myers line.
Yeah.
And Carrier absolutely doesn't. So I might like the players, but you're giving up real assets for guys you're going to play on your third pair, for guys that are basically like injury insurance. I don't think the Canucks are in that business.
Yeah, that's fair.
This team wants wants defensive help. I think they also think right now, by the way, that their inconsistency and struggles are not about defense. Like, part of the issue that this team is working through right now is that their stars aren't playing consistently enough at the top of the lineup. They've got several players, you know, that they were counting on to be top nine guys, whether it's Joshua or Hoglander, or honestly, even Besser since he returned from the head injury, where, you know, they're just not playing enough in the offensive end of the rink. They're not holding on to pucks. They're not generating enough possession. And as such, their defense is more likely to be exposed in its own end. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they're not playing well enough as a five-man unit. This team wants to upgrade their defense, but they're not in panic mode, and they're not going to overpay for guys who are coin flips to fundamentally alter their situation. They will, however, I think, pay retail price, pay full value at some point between now and the trade deadline for a guy that they see as an actual needle mover.
And from everything you've said, everything insiders as a whole have said,
Is mine? Yeah, I think mine is. So I'll just drag the puck for you, bud. Anyway, let's, since I can't telegraph what you were going to say, let's move on and quickly get through lineup notes. We don't have any. Rick Tocchet will speak at 4:30. Canucks not holding morning skate ahead of the game against Vegas. However, Vegas recalled Tanner Lyzinski. Don't open mail from that gentleman. And as such, it seems that both Nick Waugh and Ivan Barbashev, a key piece for the Vegas Golden Knights, will not, most likely, be in the lineup tonight for Vegas. So Vegas playing a little bit shorthanded. We know they're sort of piecing it together in terms of their forward depth as it is, even more so this evening as it stands. In terms of the playoff forecast, the Canucks lost to a pretty impressive Utah Hockey Club. We'll talk more about that because I thought Utah was excellent last night. Really put a bit of a hurting on the Canucks in terms of their 5-on-5 form. I was deeply impressed by a team that, you know, I'd already been deeply impressed by over the course of the season. That loss dropped their playoff probability down by 1% to 90%. Utah went and got upgraded from a 36% chance of making the playoffs to a 42% chance per Dom Lecision's model. That's a huge upgrade in the fortunes of the Utah Hockey Club, who, as it stands today, as a result of their victory in overtime over Vancouver and Salt Lake City on Wednesday night, currently sit in eighth place in the Western Conference by point percentage. Closing out the whiteboard, let's look quickly at the gambling odds. The Canucks are road underdogs on the second leg of a back-to-back in Vegas. Plus 145, the Canucks are on the money line. Vegas minus 170. The over-under is set at 5.5 with steam on the over. You can actually get plus 100 if you want to take the under 5.5 goals. I'll be rejoined by Josh on the other side of the break, but this has been the whiteboard. You're listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.
trading cards, and sports memorabilia this side of the North Pole. Feel the excitement of the season with great deals on trading cards, framed photos, apparel, and tabletop games at Pastime in Langley, Burnaby Metrotown, Guildford Town Center in Surrey, and Capilano Mall in North Vancouver. Or shop online at pastimesports.ca.
How about now?
Nope. But you can say late fall.
Instead of winter?
Oh, I'm still not ready for that.
But you should be. Hey, it's Jeff, owner of Turn 3 Auto.